Page 94, the Private Eye podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Page 94. My name's Andrew Hunter-Murray and I'm here in the Eye studio with Adam McQueen, Ian Hislop and Rachel Clay. And we have got a special bumper episode today about two blokes called Andrew. There are no prizes for guessing who one of them is, but the other is extremely interesting. So, Rachel, in the back pages of Private Eye over the last few issues, there have been stories about a solicitor whose name is Andrew Milne.
We have called him in the magazine a litigious bully, and I would say that's a pretty fair description. He brings litigation against anyone unlucky enough to be in a contract with him, and he uses his legal knowledge and his knowledge of the legal system to sort of extract money from people. For himself, okay. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we're used to solicitors litigating other people, but this is personal.
So I'll give you a couple of examples. He moved house. A removals firm moved his stuff and stored some of his stuff afterwards. This removals firm was bought up by another company. It sent him an invoice with the old company's company number and company name, which you might not think a great crime.
It's kind of a procedural
error. A clerical error, yeah. Reissue the invoice, whatever. Not to Andrew Milne, it represented an opportunity. And he sent various letters to the directors of this firm. He alleged data theft. He alleged invoicing fraud. He said he was going to bring a class action worth millions for all the defrauded customers.
Because all the other customers might have received the wrong company name and number on the invoice as well.
And it was on the website, so therefore a claim worth millions, he said. So he finds these technical errors, essentially, and then he masses up the costs of fighting it and says, do you know what, I'll settle. The settlement he offered in this case was a public apology, I don't know who to, £130,000 and free storage until 2030, which is a nice touch, I thought.
Mm.
The company didn't settle, they did fight it, it cost them a lot of money. The best part of 100 grand, they say.
It must be utterly terrifying as a kind of small business owner. I mean, if you're just running a removals firm or something, and you get what appear to be, you know, sort of very legalese letters from a qualified lawyer. It's not something you ever think you're going to have to fight. It must take over your life.
Well, now let's talk about the Sheffield houses, because I think that really illustrates the case.
Yes.
So this was our first piece on him. It came via the Sheffield Tribune, which was the first publication to get this little bit, and I think he's quite a frightening person to publish things about because he's so litigious. He had bought the freeholds of leasehold houses in Sheffield and I think Bolton and perhaps some other areas as well at about sort of between £300 and £400 a pop. They're not worth much. They're sort of 800-year leases. The ground rent is about £8.50 a year and you can't put it up. They're not worth much, only to the person who lives there. And then he started sending letters to some of the homeowners saying, well, you've broken the terms of your lease. That's a nice kitchen extension you've got. Or you've changed your windows. I didn't give my permission. You know, you could forfeit your home if you've broken the lease. But don't worry, because you can buy the freehold for me. It'll be £25,000. You've got 14 days to agree and 14 days to pay.
And he did this multiple times.
So some people spent the money on legal advice. He didn't really have a claim. Damages would be tiny. There was no significant breach of the lease. It had timed out, whatever. But other people were very frightened and coughed up. I mean, there was a tale of a woman in her 80s who borrowed £25,000 in an emergency loan to pay him off. There was an eye reader who got in touch. His mum was 92 in fine fit fettle. She got one of these very aggressive letters. I've read it. It's scary. They got legal advice and they didn't pay up, but she did have a stroke. So it's horrible. It's horrible.
Reading these stories, it kind of reminded me, you often sort of forget the purpose of the law, which, if used well, protects people.
Yes.
And this is an example of someone finding any kind of procedural wriggle through to use it for ill.
I think so.
You laughed at that, Ian. Like, I know you're used to people using the law for ill, but it's just staggering to read how much. I mean, he spent about £120,000, give or take, on the freeholds that he bought, you know, averaging it out. He's spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, he's speculating, I presume, to accumulate a lot more. I mean, you said at least six people have fallen for the 25 grand thing, so he would have already made his money back
with
just six out of 280 odd freeholds.
Yeah.
And this was already a system that was kind of like sort of rife for misuse, was it? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the government are looking into the leasehold and freehold system at the moment,
aren't
they?
Oh, yes, but I'm a bit cross about this because they are. They're reforming leasehold. It's a slow and tricky process, and I'm glad that it's happening, and they are doing it quite carefully.
Just take us through for a second, because it's one of these things you don't find out about until you've bought a house, and I'm sure there are lots of listeners who've done that. So the difference between freehold and leasehold, freehold is essentially owning the building,
the land,
the ground,
the building, the lot. Leasehold, not only do you sort of not own the fabric or the land, but you own it. It's a long rent. There's an end to it, and then it goes back. So if that's 900 years, that's all right. If that's 90 years, that's sort of not all right, because the value of the property starts to fall because it's...
And then you have to renegotiate with the freeholder to say, can I extend it?
Yes. And you pay more. It's called marriage value. And that is part of what's getting abolished, which is a good thing. But there is a little sort of subsector of this leasehold reform. So if you live in a leasehold flat and somebody wants to sell the freehold, they have to offer it to you first. It's called the right of first refusal. You get told it's for sale and you can buy it. If you live in a leasehold house, you don't have that right for no reason that I can understand. So there are websites where you might have a nice photo of your house and the freehold of this house is for sale. You don't know it's for sale. The first you know is when some unscrupulous person like Andrew Milne puts a letter through your door saying, I am now your freeholder. I did contact the Ministry for Housing, say, are you going to reform this?
Because, and tell me, Rachel, they said, you're quite right, Rachel, how stupid of us. I think we must immediately change this.
I think you may be able to tell the answer to that. They sent back a very nice reply that they're reforming leasehold and it's all going to be much better. But they are not reforming that. It just leaves open the door to exploitative and unscrupulous folk. Not everyone's going to act like an Andrew Milne, but what's stopping them, I suppose? Mm. By
and
the
what
way,
is?
What is stopping them?
Well, regulation.
One of the things that ought to be stopping them would be the regulator. So that's the Solicitors Regulation Authority. The local MP up in Sheffield Hallam, Olivia Blake, she's reported Milne to the police, to South Yorkshire Police, over these aggressive letters. Others have been trying to sort of get the SRA, the Solicitors Regulation Authority, to clip the wings of Andrew Milne for a very long time. So there was a judge 2 years ago who did a judgment in a case that he was involved in, the Crown House litigation.
He said his behaviour had been disgraceful and inexcusable, I think.
Yes.
I mean, that's
yes.
quite... You've been at the end of some harsh judgments in your time, haven't you? And that's quite full on.
Another report in the Eye said they've been investigating him since 2018.
By 2021, Andrew Milne had submitted 184 complaints against the regulator to it. And
184.
And applied for two injunctions, insisting that it investigate his complaints before it investigate and regulate him.
The SRA claims it is urgently considering restricting his practising licence. What are they waiting for?
I think you misunderstand the term urgent.
Such a naive...
Well, I do have news.
Oh, OK.
Because last week, last Wednesday, in fact, they finally got around to putting some interim restrictions on his practising licence. Essentially, the SRA is waiting until... So he's just been found guilty of stalking. It's waiting for this... we're going to come on to that.
I hope we
you
are,
can't
right.
just throw away... He's just been found guilty of stalking, Rachel.
Yes, well, spoiler alert. Yeah. He was charged with stalking a young gentleman called Daniel Cloak, who had a legal blog called Mouse in the Court, bombarding him with emails between March and August 2024, I think about 120 emails. The main themes of the emails are, I'm going to sue you and I want you to go on a date with me.
And it's an interesting approach, isn't it?
It's
okay.
Suing people into a relationship with you. It's,
You might think it a doomed combo. There was a voicemails on his birthday. Happy birthday, Daniel. Daniel Cloak never gave him his phone number or his address. And there was also, ultimately, a visit to Daniel Cloak's home and a rather menacing note through the door, which we'll get to. Just a tenor of the emails that he was sending, only one of which Daniel Cloak ever replied to. One of them said, I've got a property in Wales. Come and visit me in Wales. We'll, you know, spend some time together. And I won't sue you for 14 days either side of the visit. What a charming, irresistible offer. Another one said, oh, let's go for a weekend in a hotel and I'll transfer £1,000 into your bank account in the morning. It's a bit grim, isn't it? Bit grim. But that's not all. That's not all. Andrew Milne came to the house. There's doorbell footage of him loitering outside. He's got a brown envelope in his hand. It might be court papers. But what we do know is that when Daniel Cloke got home that night, there was a handwritten note pushed through the letterbox. And it said, where are you? Lol, lol, lol. Are you suddenly very shy? I am amazed there is actually a property which can be seized. After you are bankrupt, if you agree to be my total sex slave, I will let you live in the garage. And that's the point at which Daniel Cloke called the police.
So he's just in the last month been found guilty for these stalking offences.
Do you want to hear the defence first?
Sure.
Can I share the defence?
Yeah. Because
I think it's worth hearing. Andrew Milne's defence was that Daniel Cloke was stalking him. The snag was that Andrew Milne couldn't produce any phone records, couldn't produce any hotel receipts or sort of any corroboratory evidence, no text messages. He said Daniel Cloke had emailed him, but he didn't have any of the emails.
And what did the judge make of this?
What did the judge make of this? Her verdict was crystal clear. She said Daniel Cloke's evidence was entirely credible. Andrew Milne's claims were not true.
Now, Rachel, I know that the I will have been in touch with Mr. Milne, so I think it's only fair that we read out his statement in response to us, which was, the allegations you make are wholly false and simply lies that you have invented. We have instructed leading counsel and will shortly be pursuing a claim. I don't suppose there's been any sign of that claim?
Bated breath.
Okay, we're waiting for it.
We're waiting.
So, he's been found guilty by a judge.
Yes.
And the Solicitors Regulation Authority has suspended him for, what, 5 minutes, did you say? Is it? No, longer.
Interim.
Or it's been less than a week.
Less than a week.
What is it? 5 days already?
This is beginning to sound like a story in which justice is nearly being done.
Well, fingers crossed. So the next stage, 10th of March, is sentencing. The judge has to assess sort of culpability and harm and decide where to land. The options are a fine, community service, or 26 weeks in prison. Who knows what she'll think, but the SRA is making what it does about Andrew Milne contingent on what she decides. It seems to me that having had this man on its casebook for 8 years, what is the SRA for if it can't bring a person like this?
Well, what seems particularly extraordinary to you is they've already had a referral from a judge, haven't they? In that 2024 case you were talking about. You would think that would sort of prioritise things and maybe get things fast-tracked, but evidently not.
So it could be that he's put in jail and continues to act as a solicitor during his time there.
Well,
I mean, that would be amusing, at least.
You wouldn't, on the SRA's part, you wouldn't want to, you know, jump
Rule
the gun.
Out.
Oh, no.
He's buck passing,
eight
isn't
years.
He? Have you been investigating for that long to suddenly react to a totally
years
separate criminal case?
We don't know what's happened in the background. Evidently, they've tried to investigate him. He's pushed back very hard. We don't know what the story is, but we do know there was no outcome and the public was not protected because we've got these stories. Now it's waiting for the judge to kind of enable the next phase. What was it doing for the 8 years? Why have people not been protected in that time? I don't know the answer.
Well, when you say he's pushed back very hard, I mean, he's obviously attempted to terrify them by taking out injunctions and insisting. But they are a regulatory body.
Yes.
They can't
also
expect everyone just to roll over and say, I'm very sorry. I mean, the people involved who've been up to no good may not admit it immediately.
Also, there's one of him and there's around 800 of them.
800? Right.
So it feels like an untold story, and at the moment it just looks very feeble. There was an MP stood up, Phil Brickell, in January in Parliament and called for a debate into why the SRA specifically has done such a bad job of regulating Andrew Milne. The government said they wouldn't have a debate, but they said they would write to the SRA and ask them, and I felt like saying, I've tried that!
This whole story seems to indicate lots of ways in which law does not work for people who are on the receiving end of it. I mean, all these vexatious claims for 25 grand, yes. or I'm going to sue you, you know, or you're going to lose your house, it hasn't delivered for people.
No, it hasn't delivered for people. And the SRA is sort of there to make sure that solicitors don't abuse the I suppose, the privileges they have as legal practitioners with their knowledge of the law. And then, and it's not doing that. It's supposed to protect the public, and it hasn't. I mean, I've spoken to people who've lodged complaints with the SRA. Some have had witness statements taken, some haven't. Mm. Quite a lot haven't. Why is it unable to act? It seems like we're four people. I think if it were left to us, we'd know what to do. We'd find a way.
There's got to be an argument for the entire justice system just being handed over to private eye. Just sort it all out. We could rattle through it all, I think. Yeah.
I'm afraid the fact that he is a solicitor would... That's enough evidence.
A proven lawyer.
Proven lawyer, yes. Yeah.
All right, let's now change horses as we come to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, formerly Prince Andrew.
Informally an awful lot of terrible things.
But currently a recent arrestee on suspicion of misconduct in public office. Now, Private, I covered the matter very sensitively. Ian, the cover that you chose, Andrew, the Net Titans... What's the time, officer? About 25 years. Now, the weird thing is, you decided this 2 or 3 days before Andrew was arrested, and the mailbag at the Eye is full of a lot of people saying, can you do us next week's lottery numbers now? So what's going on?
Well, there's a lot of suggestions that I am Mystic Meg.
Yeah.
Or the other thing they're suggesting is that I was given the tip-off.
Yes.
You know, my arrangements with the police are fairly complex and fairly deep. And I do request, before they actually arrest people, they tell me.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid that wasn't the case. No, it's quite simple. I thought, on Monday morning, I thought, it'd be really funny if there was a picture of Andrew with a policeman. So we went through all the stock library files. And as chance would have it, there's a picture of Andrew looking at his watch next to a policeman. And there isn't a comic writer on earth who wouldn't then do the time joke.
Yeah.
So we did.
Yeah.
3 days later, he was arrested.
Yeah.
I have to say, my intuition was, because in the same issue, there's a fake account of the police going to see... His Majesty the King to tell him that things are getting very serious with his brother. And Charles's actual real statement that the law must take its course struck me as pretty clear, being thrown under the royal bus, that he'd had enough of his brother, he'd had enough of this, and Thames Valley turned up, and he said, absolutely, the law must take its course. I thought it would. I didn't know it would be 2 days or 3 days, but I had a feeling at some point protection had been removed, as they say in royal circles.
What I do think is interesting is that I think both Charles and his mother were doing their best to protect the institution and the family in whatever way they could. Now, back in, you know, until she died, the Queen's instinct was, well, let's protect the family by giving Andrew absolute immunity, brushing everything under the carpet, not acknowledge anything, you know, provide... We don't know where the money came to pay off Virginia Giuffre. I don't think that's been yet made clear. And then
Charles—that's another thing that Charles has washed his hands off. He said it wasn't from him.
Ah, there we go. Okay,
was, yeah.
One name off the list.
Yeah.
But he was quite keen to say that quite quickly.
Yeah, but Charles's instinct is to do exactly the reverse. But in both cases, the impulse is the same, which is protecting the institution.
Yes, I mean, in our fake account of this, Charles said that the real culprit for this hadn't yet been found, and it was in fact his mother, which is an exaggeration. But there's no doubt that they feel her approach, which you mention, was wrong, and in the end led to nothing.
Well, Flunky revealed a couple of issues ago, and then I saw it was revealed again exclusively on the front page of the Daily Telegraph a couple of days ago.
Good.
The King, the Prince of Wales, as he then was, actually strongly opposed his brother's appointment as trade envoy back in 2001. He said specifically at the time, because he said all he's going to do is go after women and play golf all the time, which is exactly what happened.
Tony Blair knew better, didn't he?
Powerful Tony Blair figure with in his government unerring who judgment. Was pushing it through, not just Tony Blair, but of course Peter Mandelson as well, who,
Hi, everybody. Little production note from Andy here. We recorded this episode, I'd say, about 2 hours before the news broke that Mr. Mandelson had been arrested. So yet again, it's a strike for the eyes clairvoyance task force. We are going to be setting up a hotline that you can ring to get your fortune told. Back to the show. We should say exactly why Andrew's been arrested. So the offence of which he's suspected misconduct in public office is quite an odd one. And I know that, Adam, you've got a lot more experience of it covering it than
yeah,
most.
Yeah, thank you. let's
be specific
about this.
Because of your work on Leveson and all the, you know, all the News of the World journalists and their sources, for example, police officers who were paid for stories. But it is quite a weird offence. I mean, it's very
old. It's
a
difficult offence to prosecute. Yeah. It's been around for a long time. You have to prove a certain number of things. Interestingly, it's got to count as an abuse of the public's trust. And interestingly, it can just be willfully neglecting to perform your duty as well as doing anything kind of corrupt. So I was trying to think of an example of what this would be like. The mayor in Jaws when he refuses to close the beaches. I reckon we could have had him on that one, probably. It is such a complicated and difficult law to prosecute under that it is actually in the process of being rewritten. There is a process going through Parliament at the moment, which is going to oblige it to include proof that you used your position to improperly benefit from that action. And that's sort of the question of it. So, I mean, sort of loosely prescribed, it could mean simply getting kind of leaks from people in any sort of public office. So that would include certainly police officers, prison officers, civil servants of any kind. Awful lot of journalists would be in an awful lot of trouble if we got prosecuted for people leaking stuff that was in the public interest. So it has to not cover that. And specifically in the case you referred to, which was the News of the World or the wider company of News UK, as they are now, News International then, it was civil servants, prison guards, a lot of few police officers, but I think also a lot of kind of civilian police workers who kind of had access to files and computers and things who were prosecuted in that case because News UK turned around and grossed them all up along with a load of their own journalists because they were trying to prevent prosecutions going up to a sort of corporate level. Interesting, the side of that Rupert Murdoch's newspapers are quite keen to talk up is that all of the journalists, bar one who was later cleared on appeal, were found not guilty of the crime they were accused of, which was an even more complicated one because that was conspiracy to commit misconduct in public service. So,
but quite minor offenders on misconduct were put away.
Yes, 34 separate prosecutions resulted in people either being fined or receiving prison sentences in a lot of cases, which is the bit that News UK are a lot less keen to talk about. Interestingly, in the interconnectedness of all things, the executive who signed off on a lot of these people being grassed up to the police was Will Lewis, who has just lost his job at the Washington Post, where he was about as popular with the journalists there as the ones he was actually trying to put in prison at News UK.
So when the Times is stridently saying the law must take its course, they mean Andrew should be treated in the same way as all these other people.
Yeah, absolutely they do, yes. Yeah.
And to be clear, this is about the period when he was a trade envoy, Andrew, I mean. So this is 2001... when he was appointed to 2011.
And not sex trade envoy. That wasn't then part of the description.
No.
I'm just making that clear.
But interestingly, does it have to be? I mean, that's one of the questions. I mean, if anything is defined as a public office, surely being a prince of the realm counts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you actually have to be on the payroll? He wasn't paid as a trade envoy, was he? Although I think the expenses were quite spectacular, and no doubt some of the documents that are being poured over by police at the moment.
And I think it's in relation in particular to those alleged offences. So this is taking trade documents, sort of government trade documents, and passing them, forwarding them, sometimes within 5 minutes, to Jeffrey Epstein or one of his associates. So briefings on reconstructing Helmand province, which was sent over to Epstein immediately. Official trade reports for all sorts of Asian countries, which just went straight across. Mm. So those are the claims. It's nothing to do with Virginie Giuffre, for one.
No.
It's nothing to do with, as far as I can tell, any claims of sexual misconduct. It's to do with specifically these things.
Yes, and it's straightforward lifts from the disclosures in the Epstein files. It's not like, well, we're looking for evidence now. You have the evidence. It's right there.
But interestingly, the evidence is there of exactly the same thing in the case of Peter Mandelson. You know, similar things of documents, confidential cabinet briefings about the financial crisis when he was in the cabinet in 2009. Just being, again, just sort of being almost auto-forwarded straight on to Jeffrey Epstein.
does an arrest grant you particular powers to conduct searches and things like that?
It does. I mean, you have to get a warrant in order to search a property. The easiest way to do that is if there is an arrest. That wasn't the case in the case of Peter Mandelson. And you can also just invite people in to search if you think you've got nothing to hide or you think that might help your case in any way. Flunky's pointed out as well, I mean, the problem with being in that sort of position, I mean, there would be an awful lot in the way of written reports on the activities of Andrew. He was a trade envoy for the government, but that meant travelling along with, you know, he had the sort of full diplomatic service behind him. They would be sending ambassadors and people whose countries he'd been visiting would have been sending back an awful lot of paperwork about that. They would have been obliged to anything they thought was suspicious or dodgy going on. They'd have been obliged to report that back up the up the tree to the Prime Minister, who then presumably would have passed it on to the Queen's private secretary. Flunky also pointed out Andrew had his own private secretaries, several of them. Amanda Thirsk, most famously, was the one who lost her job after advising him it would be a good idea to do that Newsnight interview. But there's an awful lot of people out there who will have not only things to say, but will have kept records. Yeah. And that's another case where the King has kind of chucked his brother under the bus. He said full access to whatever royal records they need in order to conduct this investigation, which for journalists and researchers. I mean, think of Andrew Loney, who kicked off a lot of this with his book about Andrew and Sarah Ferguson, entitled, absolutely brilliant book, but fought massive kind of freedom of information campaigns and desperately trying to get any of this stuff out of the Royal Archives. And there's absolutely no, you know, they remain entirely closed forever. So this is an incredible opportunity that the police are being given for access to that kind of material.
And there is always a turning point. So Flunky again said, you know, the special protection units and all these people, they must, you know things, but they're incredibly discreet. Well, they're incredibly discreet until the searchlight turns on them and everyone says, why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you know? A number of them are going to say, because we weren't allowed to.
I mean,
and I guess that will come out.
Do people sign, I presume people sign non-disclosure agreements when they step down from a position of this sensitivity? I might be wrong, but
they probably do, but I mean, what we've established in the cases of Philip Green at BHS and Harvey Weinstein is, you know, those can be overridden in cases of public interest or criminal activity.
Right.
I mean, a police investigation, well, I would think, overrides an NDA in most cases. Yeah.
Yes, and I do think if you say, I did murder this person, but I don't want to talk about it. And you sign it. I don't think that is legal.
Okay. That's good to know.
He hasn't been accused of murder yet, I don't think.
No, it was a theoretical
although
case.
They are trying to take him out of the line of succession, so it does suggest he's eighth in the line of succession.
Yes.
Does suggest they're kind of thinking of a kind of Hearts and Coronet-style massacre at some point.
Well, we're all going to go up one. I'm really excited.
Hey, a little bit closer.
What number are you now?
I don't want to, like, it's seven figures, but, you know.
There is actually precedent, of course, for former Dukes of York for murdering small nephews, isn't there? So, I mean, maybe they should look out.
I always thought the line of succession was a biological line, not something that could be determined. I didn't realise you could be removed from it. Where's the precedent there? Is that from the abdication? Is that, I mean, he didn't have any successors.
He was, well, and then it went to his brother, didn't it, of course?
Yeah.
His younger brother, presumably. I mean, as soon as you start to pick at it, sort of like everything with the monarchy, any possible justification for it does kind of follow. I mean, either they've got this sort of magical blood that makes them better than all of us and suitable to sit on the throne, or they don't. If you can start chopping and changing and removing people...
Chopping, unfortunate, Adam.
Chopping. Well, actually, The Sun said last week, this is the first high-profile royal to be arrested since Charles I, who's had his head chopped off 2 years later. I thought, are we booking that in for 2028?
I think one interesting element is that after Andrew was trade envoy... That ended. And by the way, the reports on that from the time say, oh, you know, Andrew has stepped down. He's been associated with a convicted US billionaire sex offender, jet-setting around the world. This was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Like it was the slowest burning scandal
it was
ever,
known.
I think. Yeah.
It was absolutely known. After that happened, he set up this thing, Pitch at Palace, right? Which was a kind of basically an aristocratic dragon's den, effectively. And instead of the taxpayer funding the very lavish trips and everything, it was business leaders who were, you know, paying for all of this stuff, all the travel, all the jollies all around the world. And Pitch at Palace kind of was, you know, making investments and things and facilitating them. And it was perceived by the Duke as a source of income. And this is something else that was written about quite a lot. Him using information gained as a royal, because it was Pitch at Palace, literally, to his financial advantage. And it became there's no clearer massive national security risk than having this big kind of cash point entry to Buckingham Palace, basically. It's that, you know. Mm.
We know that he was being actively targeted by Chinese spies.
Exactly, the Chinese spy.
Yang Tenbo last year was, you know, revealed to have been trying to get in with Andrew on behalf of the Chinese Secret Service.
Exactly. Like, it's just constant. It's very weird reading back over the stories and thinking this has happened again and again and again and again and again.
Yes, and usually with, you know... a crisis of this sort, it's either sex, money or foreign influence. And with Andrew, it's bingo. It's all of them.
It does slightly mess with my sort of assumption that the powers that be are all, you know, keeping a tight hold on things. Yeah. Instead, they've got this sort of, I mean, you know, liability prince who's been sort of given a free pass to create security issues, you know, money issues, all sorts of problems. Who did look at Prince Andrew and go, brilliant, like, he's the man we need to represent Britain?
His mum. I'm afraid it was his mum. In terms of King Charles throwing his brother under the bus, I was looking into it. It was something that intrigued me because I'm very boring on media lore and that sort of thing. Is why Andrew was named immediately that he was arrested. The first people to do it, interestingly, were the BBC. And, of course, famously, the reason why there's been so much trouble over that was because of Cliff Richard, when he had his home searched in a police investigation that went nowhere, hadn't been arrested, got an enormous payout both from the BBC and South Yorkshire Police. And ever since then, people have fretted over the right to privacy of people who are being investigated and whether or not they should be named, what points should. College of Policing official advice is still that you don't even name people when they've been arrested, you just do it when they've been charged. But we were straight in there at 8 o'clock in the morning on Prince Andrew with the BBC and various other media sources then saying he had been arrested. Effectively, it was because a confirmation came through. And do you know who that was from? Oh, King Charles, who put out a statement at midday, essentially saying, yeah, it was him, and the law must now take its course. So you don't really get a much higher authority in the land terms of naming of suspects than the king, do you?
So all that a middle-aged man who lives in,
I mean, it was a bit of a
few houses.
They said a man in his 60s, and we're searching properties in palaces, in Windsor and in Berkshire and in Norfolk. So, yeah, it wasn't that difficult to put the jigsaw together.
But Charles made absolutely sure.
Yeah, absolutely there. Which credit should also go, actually, to the photographer, freelance photographer Terry Harris, who'd been camping out outside Sandringham just to see if anything happened and spotted the unmarked police cars going in. Separate to the other brilliant photographer who took what will now, along with that photo of Virginia Giuffre upstairs at Ghislaine Maxwell's house with Andrew, become like kind of the iconic, absolutely extraordinary photo. His name was Phil Noble. Do you want to know an interesting fact about Phil Noble?
Yeah.
He was one of the Liverpool gang on children's show Why Don't You? Do you remember Why Don't You? Just switch off the television set and go and do something less boring instead.
And
he
did.
He's gone on. He has. He absolutely has.
The day that Andrew was arrested was, has been well reported, his 66th birthday. And it's also the day, of course, that he became eligible for his state pension. Until now, we know he's been surviving just on his Navy pension, which is about £20,000 a year. So there'll be an extra £230 a week coming in.
Will that cover the chef and the valet?
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. He can economise. And he's still got the winter fuel allowance, of course, which is good.
I mean, there are two schools at the moment, aren't there? I'm sure Adam's covered this on the street. There's either this is the worst threat the royals ever, or hurrah for Charles, he's acted promptly and well.
Right.
And this will stabilise the monarchy.
After 15 years, as we were saying.
And did you see Kate at the BAFTAs? She looked great.
Right.
Which, again, is an argument in favour of the monarchy.
It does seem like accountability is optional for the monarchy.
We should wrap up soon, but Ian, I know that as we started this conversation with this week's, you know, very prescient cover, and people have been writing in saying it's not Mystic Meg, it's Insightful Ian. Is there anything else? Have you seen anything else through the veil?
Well, interestingly, just as you open that magazine from the cover, there is a piece about Peter Mandelson's firm Global Counsel saying, "Is it about to shut down? Hey presto." It's in administration. I'm just saying.
Much mourned by all of us, I know. Yep, and there it is. Global cooling.
It's sort of a cross between journalism and voodoo doll stuff, isn't it? What should we predict next time?
That's it for this episode of Page 94. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Ian, Adam and Rachel. And if you would like to read more stories about either Andy we've been covering, or Mandy for that matter, then you can get your copy of Private Eye. You go into any newsagent, any larger shop, or if you want to, you know, bite the bullet and treat yourself, you can get a very reasonably priced subscription by going to private-eye.co.uk. Find out what's happening 2 days after the next one is printed. So that's it for today. Thanks again for listening. And as always, to Matt Hill of Rethink Audio for producing. Bye for now.